slow, and the flag's been flying low, and a lot of people saying that America's fixing to fall. But speaking just for me and some people from Tennessee, we got a thing or two to tell you all. This lady may have stumbled, but she ain't never failed. And if the Russians don't believe that, they can all go straight to hell. We're gonna put her feet back on the path of righteousness, and then God bless America again. And you never did think that it ever would happen again. In America, did you? You never did think that we'd ever get together again. We're damn sure fools, you're walking real proud and we're talking real loud again. In America, you never did think that it ever would happen again.
Hoorah! From the sound up in Long Island. Good afternoon, folks. Welcome aboard or welcome back. I'm Jeff Metcalf with you here on WorldNet Daily Radio. 877-456-6789 is our toll-free number. And this hour, a pause from Wall Street being underwhelmed with the Fed's rate cut and the power crisis in California, and talk about some large organizations that you may never have heard of, nevertheless can and will have an impact on you. Things like the Bank of International Settlements and other things that go bump in the night. Joan Vion has been our guest in the past. She has an organization called Women's International Media Group. And she's a fascinating lady who, for some reason, bounces all over the world attending all these various UN-type conferences. And I'm delighted to welcome Joan back to the program. Hi, Joan.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure I bounce, but somehow I get there.
I just don't know why these guys even bother talking to you. But,
well, like I told you, I'm 5 feet tall and I don't look like I know anything. And so they don't think I'm, you know, hey, I'm easy, you know. Until I open my mouth.
James, write that down. Joan Vion is easy. We'll save that for a bumper.
Oh no.
It is now on tape. I'm going to send a copy to your husband. Okay. Joan, tell us about the last meeting you went to and the next one that you're going to. And I most specifically want to get to the difference between perception and reality, and what we're being told and what's really happening.
The last meeting that I attended was the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. This is what I consider one of the most powerful meetings in the world. It is comprised of, and what makes it so powerful is that it brings together 1,000 CEOs from the world's largest corporations from around the world. It brings together the hierarchy of the United Nations infrastructure, the Secretary General, and the IMF and the World Bank leaders, etc.
Now, are all the people that are listed on this Financial Stability Forum, are they all represented at this meeting?
Most of the people who head up the Financial Stability Forum do come to the World Economic Forum.
Was Alan there?
Alan Greenspan?
Yeah.
No, he wasn't there at the World Economic Forum. With regard to the Financial Stability Forum, that is an organization. You know, you were talking about the problem Wall Street. Well, the Financial Stability Forum was set in place several years ago by the Bank for International Settlements, and it is these guys who now they say are going to manage the markets of the world or the financial system of the world to make sure that we don't have another Asia or some other crash. Serious crash somewhere in the financial system.
You mean the Greenspan crash that's been predicted?
I hope not. That's a good question. But the Financial Stability Forum is now comprised of some very, very powerful individuals, group organizations, which really bring together all of the alphabet soup, if you will, of the world, the Group of Seven, the central bank ministers from the Group of Seven countries. That means the United States, Canada, Italy, Germany, Japan, France, and Great Britain. It brings together various committees from the Bank for International Settlements, some organizations that most people haven't heard of, like the International Organization for Security Commissions, which is like a United Nations of stock exchange. It brings together the Treasury secretaries from the top seven countries that I mentioned. It brings together the World Bank and the IMF. And people are saying that they're going to monitor the world system to ensure that it doesn't fall apart.
Well, wait a minute. I thought that, you know, the New York Stock Exchange, the NASDAQ, the English Exchange, the French, the Nikkei, I thought they all functioned independently.
That's a good question. What I have seen, what we have seen, is the fact that the world is being put into three trading zones. We have in our hemisphere, and I know we're going to talk about the free trade areas of the Americas in a few minutes, we have in our hemisphere the Americas. The Americas comprise the 34 countries in our hemisphere from Canada, the U.S., Mexico, Central and South America. And we are going to be guided, dictated, and on the dollar. You then have, as everybody knows, the European Union. And currently there are 14 countries that have qualified to join the union. They have changed some of their laws. They have reduced their debt. They have rearranged different things that come into compliance with the rules and the regulations of the EU.
I'm dying to see how they get the lira on the euro.
Probably the Italians are looking to find out how that happens as well. But the European Union will be dictated by the euro, and then we have Asia with Japan, China, Australia, New Zealand, and the other countries in Asia. And that's a little bit further ways away, but will be guided by the Asian Free Trade Agreement, AFTA. And so we have three hemispheric currencies coming into play, the dollar, the euro, and the yen. And what we are seeing now,
with the ultimate objective being that somewhere, you know, decades down the road maybe,
yes,
they're all synthesized into one currency, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And there have been times when they've been close in value to where we could say that they are harmonized or integrated.
Well, that sounds like a cool euphemism. Harmonized or integrated.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, basically when you have three currencies and they're almost the same value, you have a global currency known by three different names: the dollar, the yen, and the euro.
Yeah, but what about the routine market fluctuations? I mean, I can remember a couple of months ago, the euro was in the toilet against the dollar, and then it bounced back a little bit. The yen's got their own problems.
Well, what we are seeing, you know, I've been studying the dollar and the euro for a number of years, and I think what we are seeing, for example, I attended the Bank for International Settlements annual meeting last June, and at that time we had just had the NASDAQ had reached its high in March. It had tanked by April. It had come a little bit back by May, and here I was in June in Basel, Switzerland, and the managing director basically said, he announced this, it's Europe's time to grow. And
whether you like it or not?
Whether you like it or not, it's Europe's time to grow, buddy. And, you know, I remember asking him how was this going to come about? And he basically said, well, American values would not look as attractive, number one. Number two, we would have a situation whereby European stocks would look more attractive, and number three, there would be a slowing pace in the U.S. economy. And here we are 9 months later, and the bottom line is all of this has come to fruition. I'm sure you discussed the fact that right now
we don't believe in coincidences here.
Well, I don't either. I say that with tongue-in-cheek. The Dow is within 70 points of a official recession from its all-time high last year of, I think, 11.4. And the NASDAQ obviously is in serious recession. And so, you know, I myself have been writing for the last 9 months about a switch, a transition to the euro. I don't like to talk about it. I don't like to say it. But there are a lot of reasons why the euro in the future will look extremely attractive. It's very interesting. I was just reading before I got on the air, and one of the newspapers I read besides WorldNet Daily is the Financial Times, and today's paper says U.S. Energy Secretary warns of worst crises in energy since the 1970s.
Mm-hmm. Said that yesterday.
Yes. And so we have a situation whereby the euro is backed by 15% gold, and we have, you know, the Arab element with regard to Are they going to take dollars in the future, since oil is denominated in dollars, or are they going to switch to the euro? And if they switch to the euro, they can make a whole lot more money, because gold usually shines in a recession, and therefore they can get a double income or a double increase between the price of energy and the value of gold. And if to the euro, they will automatically help tank the dollar.
Okay, you're almost starting to confuse me. I want to take a brief pause. Hold on, okay? Don't go away. When we come back, I want to ask you about this, these free trade areas, and specifically something we're being told as opposed to something you say has already happened, okay? Stay
all
with
right.
us. We'll be back with Joan Vion. I'm Jeff Metcalf, 877-456-6789. Joan is with the Women's International Media Group, and you don't want to miss what she's about to tell you. Minutes past the hour. Jeff Metcalf here. We're speaking with Joan Vion, and I wanted to ask her specifically about these free trade areas, and not get too bogged down in the minutia stuff, but this is kind of interesting. Joan?
Yes. You know, we are those who listen to World Net Daily and who read the newspaper, we are all concerned about our sovereignty. And I think the understanding and the fact that we have been moved into a free trade zone, just like Europe, should be of grave and great concern to every American. A number of years ago, I was having my morning cup of coffee, and I was reading the Washington Times, and I read an article that said Jack Kemp wanted a single currency for the United States and the other 33 countries in the Western Hemisphere so that we could have a stable exchange rate. And I took note of that and said, wait a minute, what is this? And then there was a little article about something called the Summit of the Americas. Well, I started to make some phone calls and found out that in 1994, Al Gore put together a major conference of all of the presidents and prime ministers of our hemisphere. They met in Miami. It's called the Miami Summit for short. And there they determined that they would start to integrate the 34 countries of our hemisphere into a free trade zone just like Europe. And so I ended up covering the 1998 meeting in Santiago, Chile, and there I was absolutely dumbfounded and chilled to the bone as I watched the 33 presidents and prime ministers. That's without Fidel Castro. He is expected, I believe, to be in Quebec in a couple of weeks when they have the third Summit of the Americas meeting. But there I saw, and I have a videotape of the 33 presidents and prime ministers of our hemisphere signing an agreement to merge as one. Backing up...
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Yes?
They just signed it? What about the need for ratification by Congress or something?
Well, I did some research there and found out that if the president signs an economic agreement and it's for the benefit of America, he doesn't necessarily need the approval of Congress. What makes the free trade areas of the Americas very unique is that it is a public-private partnership. And so it's not...
You warned us about these things years ago.
Yes. Yes, I have. Now, for people who aren't familiar with a public-private partnership, let me explain what it is and then discuss how the free trade areas of the Americas fits in. A public-private partnership is a partnership. It's a business arrangement for profit. That's what a partnership is. It's a business arrangement. The partners in this partnership are both public and private. The public partners are government, all levels of government, local government, county government, federal government, state government, foreign governments, international government. The private partners are non-government organizations. You can look at the environmental groups, you can look at the labor groups, you can look at whatever else is out there that calls themselves a non-governmental organization, as well as multinational and transnational corporations. And, for example, they would come together, and one of the tenets I find fascinating in the document that these presidents and prime ministers signed on behalf of the peoples of the Americas is for energy. And as such, they want to...
Is this the Kyoto thing?
Well, they also... yes and no. That includes Kyoto. First of all, the Americas document basically encompasses almost everything that we read about and know about that the United Nations says the world needs because it's good for them. And one of them is the Kyoto Climate Warming Treaty. The presidents and prime ministers in the original summit in Miami basically singled out Kyoto as something they agreed with and wanted to work towards. With regard to energy, they have come up with the fact that we need various forms of energy in our hemisphere. And so they're talking about, you know, gas. They're talking about all of the different...
They're making a lot of gas, too.
Yes, they are, and they're causing a lot of gas as well. But they're talking about all of the, you know, environmentally friendly forms of energy, such as, you know, your wind binds and whatever else is out there. And the point that I'm looking to make is the fact that whenever you have anything with energy, whether it's oil, whether it's gas, whether it's electric, utilities, whatever, you know, your corporations are right there, you know, to sign on the dotted line. And so when we start taking a look at the free trade areas of the Americas, it is a partnership for profit. They are looking in all areas to create partnerships, whether those partnerships are over agriculture or the environment or energy, what have you.
Well, see, here's the problem I have, though. These free trade areas are basically a collection of these NGOs, non-government organizations, public-private partnerships. Maybe I'm just being Pollyannish or naive or something, but I would think that unless or until they, you know, make it official and the Constitution doesn't exist anymore, Congress should have some say in this.
Well, I agree with you, but I didn't find anywhere where this went to Congress. Bill Clinton, you know, called together the presidents and prime ministers. They started working on this document that really integrates. You talk about education, you talk about health, you talk about transportation, about energy, you talk about finances. You can look at labor, you can look defense, trade, look at any of the cabinet-level positions. Our secretaries...
Yeah, but hold on a second. Joan, at some point this stuff is going to require some kind of funding, right? And Congress has to appropriate something, right?
They will have to appropriate money.
Mm-hmm. Well, how can they keep them out of the loop if they're the guys that control the purse strings?
I don't know. I haven't seen, I don't know of any funding, Jeff. What I do know is that I went to Santiago, Chile. I've got their documents. There are websites I can send people to. Our ministers, like I say, health, labor, education, whatever, they are meeting on a continual and constant basis to integrate the laws, the rules, the regulations of the 34 countries of this hemisphere. Now, the question is, when is all of this supposed to be done?
That's my next question. What's the time frame?
2005.
2005?
Yes. They started in 1994. So this basically is a 10-year process. And what is so upsetting, Jeff, when I went down to Santiago, Chile, you know, and I watched them sign this document, you know, they made a big deal over it, and every president went and they signed and, you know, on and on. And I came to America, and I grabbed every newspaper I could in Miami on my way home, and all they could say was, Clinton did not get fast-track authority. No one, not one paper, reported on the fact that there was an agreement to effectively merge into a new trade zone for the whole Americas. What is so upsetting is on...
I'll tell you what, hold on 1 second, because I want to explore this in some greater detail, but first I got to take care of some business. So stay with us. We'll be back with Joan Vion. This free trade areas of the Americas, according to Joan, is a done deal. We'll come back and talk to her, and we'll take your phone calls as well at 877-456-6789. That's our toll-free number. I'm Jeff Metcalf on WorldNet Daily Radio. 34 minutes past the hour. Jeff Metcalf here with you. We're talking with Joan Vian from the Women's International Media Group about this free trade area of the Americas. And what she tells us is this was signed last year. Everybody signed it, and it's a done deal already, right?
Yes.
Well, what's this talk we're hearing? We're being stroked when they tell us that it's under discussion and they're reviewing it and they're looking into it and conducting studies?
That is the only thing that I can determine, because that's what I'm reading, that Zolik will promptly look to reestablish trade promotion authority with the aim of launching negotiations on a free trade agreement for the entire Western Hemisphere. Hey, it's already a done deal. Bye now.
Take care. Joan Vian from the Women's International Media Group.
Hey, don't forget that knowledge is power if, this is a huge if, as you just heard, if you take that knowledge and you do something with it. Then you have an opportunity to be part of the solution instead of part of the problem. If you do that, then you too, like Bob Schultz, Congressman Ron Paul, Dave Shippers, and others, you can and you should be a champion.